Years.
Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. Welcome to our Satellite Sisters Word Write Festival 2015. It's our continuing series of author interviews with some of the best books coming out this summer. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California, and I am so excited to talk to our guest, Eleni Gage. She is an author, but you've seen her byline all over the place. She's written for a long time for Travel and Leisure and the New York Times. She was the beauty editor at People Magazine, and now she's the editor of Martha Stewart Weddings. But just put that all aside, because her new novel is so fantastic, Satellite Sisterhood. I absolutely loved it. It's evocative. It's rich. It's detailed. It's called The Ladies of Managua. And it's a story you have not read before, I promise you. It follows the story of three generations of Nicaraguan women, each with a secret to conceal. And they're brought together at a funeral of the grandfather. And we get a lot of information about women and motherhood and relationships, all sort of wrapped in these lush, rich travel writing details. I absolutely loved it. So it's an absolute pleasure to welcome Eleni Gage to Satellite Sisters. Hi, Eleni.
Hi, thanks for that introduction. Okay. Hard to live up to.
Have other people been as enthusiastic? Because the book just absolutely transports you to a different time and place. Was that your goal when you were writing it? Or how did you even come up with this story? I don't usually ask that question right off the bat, but I just think it's such a fascinating story about three generations of women from Nicaragua. What were the origins of this book?
Well, I'm not Nicaraguan, actually, but my husband is. So basically, I married the first Nicaraguan I ever met.
And can I just say he's adorable? Because I saw a picture of him on your website. I was like, well, you're very cute.
No, I recommend marrying the first Nicaraguan you meet. But when we first started dating, about a month in, I mean, when we first started dating, I knew nothing about Nicaragua. He mentioned to me that he grew up partly in Miami because his grandparents and his mom had come here because of the conflict in the country. One of his cousins was old enough to be drafted, which, you know, even teenagers were being drafted at the time. So they moved here for several years. And I was like, oh, yeah, what was that war about again?
Right.
And, you know, I had vague memories of the Saturday Night Live skits where the news anchors would show off their Spanish and be like, today in Nicaragua, the Contras, you know. But he sort of filled me in. And that was interesting. But then about that was so maybe our first real date. And then a couple weeks later, he showed up and said to me, oh, I just got off the phone with my grandmother. You know, she had a call from her high school boyfriend who told her that she was his one true love. And what had happened was his grandmother had gone to Sacred Heart Convent School in New Orleans in the late 1940s, early 1950s, which Nicaraguan women of a certain generation and class did back in the day. And at the time, she fell in love with this Cuban man and was about to marry him until her family tore her away from the altar. And Emilio had just taken his grandmother to Madrid, to France and Spain, to Europe for the first time. And in an elevator, they ended up talking to this man who lived in Venezuela, and he turned out to be the best friend of a Cuban
who had moved
to Venezuela. Yeah. So I was like, why did it take you so long to tell me this? We've probably been on 5 dates, and why were you keeping this from me? Because obviously I was a lot more interested in the, you know,
I must marry you so I can write this novel.
Exactly. Ill-fated love affair than the military conflict. But then the more I thought about it, what seemed really interesting to me was that this generation of women who, you know, at the time in convent school, she was learning things like how to get into a cab elegantly. And of course she studied, you know, French and art and things like that, but also table manners. And that this generation of women had kids who ended up overthrowing a dictator and becoming revolutionaries and really sort of changing the whole social order that the older women had been raised in and were upholding. So there was an interesting tension there. And then I sort of started, I did a lot of reading about the revolution in Nicaragua and the war there. And I read some oral histories of women who were involved in the revolution. And a lot of them had a hard time balancing. I mean, we have a hard time balancing family and career, right?
Yes. You know, yes.
Imagine balancing, you know, revolution and reshaping a government with family. So then I brought in the voice of the granddaughter too. So it's the story of a grandmother, the one who's educated in New Orleans, her daughter who becomes a revolutionary in the late 70s, early 80s, and her granddaughter who is largely raised by the grandmother because the mom is busy rebuilding the new Nicaragua.
Right. Right. It is complicated when your mother's a revolutionary. It's a very complicated relationship you have.
But
you summed it up beautifully because you really feel like you are in all of those places as you read the book. You are in the life of the modern day granddaughter who's an artist in New York. Then we're taken back to New Orleans in the 50s and what it was like at that convent school, Sacred Heart. Many of you probably know it. It's right, you know, it's right on St. Charles there. And then you also are taken back to the revolution in Nicaragua. And, you know, you may need a short refresher course for your history, but don't worry because you cover it all in the book. And so you get this incredible portrait of these three generations of women who are all very different. Now, you know, you're also, the book is essentially, though, about motherhood and relationship, even though the settings are really dynamic. You know, and it starts with the idea, the concept that, you know, a revolutionary makes a bad husband, right? But a revolutionary also makes a bad mother, too.
So,
she's not too hot on the motherhood, but then again, that's what she was doing. She was rebuilding a country. How do you pronounce that character's name? Because it's an unusual name, the revolutionary mom. How do you pronounce her name?
Nineksen.
Okay, Nineksen. Yeah. So, you know, that character, I think, must have been very tricky for you to write because you admire her. You admire her courage. You admire her conviction to her country. But she also sent her daughter away to be raised in another country by her mother. So how did you approach that character? Was she the one you tackled first? Or how did you approach her?
I actually put the grandmother first, Isabella, because her voice sort of rang the loudest in my head. I mean, her voice came to me first, but I alternated the chapters and wrote them in order. And to research Nineksen, because she was sort of the most difficult because we've all had, you know, we've all gone to school and the Mariana, the young woman, is pretty much my age. And I live in New York and did when I was single and all that. But the middle one, I've never fought a revolution.
Right. You
know, so I'm not... quite as brave as Nineksen, but I read a lot of oral histories of women who did fight the revolution in Nicaragua, and I particularly read the work of Nicaraguan author Jaconda Belli, who has written novels and also memoirs. And in something of hers I read, and I can't remember if it was just an interview somewhere or if it was in her memoir, she talks about reading her daughter's college essay for her applications. And it's basically about how she wishes her mother had been around more and when she was growing up. And Jaconda Belli describes getting sort of teary as she read the essay. And her daughter said to her something like, and I'm sure I'm paraphrasing it wrong, but something like, oh, don't feel bad, Mom. You couldn't be a good writer, a good revolutionary, and a good mom. And so that it really crystallized the character for me. Because she wants to be all those things. She didn't want to give up her daughter, but it was also dangerous for her daughter to be in Nicaragua. And she had a lot of reasons why she felt she needed to remain committed to this cause, both because it was something she believed in and because she lost her husband during the fight and wanted to honor his memory. So it's tough.
Well, you really feel her struggle, but you also feel her power in the book. She comes through as this very powerful female character, and it just made me think about that kind of a balance that I'd never thought about before, the building a country versus raising a daughter. But we often see absentee mothers, but they're usually dead in books, frankly. So this is I thought, boy, I haven't really read too many female characters where they're mothers, but they're there and they're doing this revolution thing. So I thought that was a really fresh character. Whereas the younger character, Maria, the daughter, she's just really searching for her place in the world. And that seems to be something that a lot of young women are doing. That's a generational thing. Why was that key to her journey, that she's literally searching for her place in the world? What was that? How did that help you determine her character?
Well, I think one of the things about absentee mothers that's difficult is if your mom's not around, you don't really have that model for yourself. So she doesn't really have a model of a marriage or a mother. She doesn't have the model that she wishes she had. You know, she does have a mother and an experience with motherhood, but it's not what she sort of idealizes and fantasizes about. And I think without realizing it, she has come to a point in her life where she doesn't know how to go forward because she doesn't have something to pattern her life on. She doesn't have the example of her mother. And the other thing that's tricky for her is that she is dating an older man who's a very established artist. And she's sort of realizing that she, in her relationship, has recreated her relationship with her mom, where she really loves someone who really loves her, but loves something else just as much and maybe a little more, and also is always going to be more successful than she is, and someone that other people look up to and other people feel they can claim a piece of just as much as she can. So she's struggling with that as well. And it's funny, my parents are both writers, and I had my mom read an early manuscript of the book, and she was like, "Oh, I don't know why Mariana's so mean to that Alan. I think he sounds great," about the artist. And she was like, "You know, I mean, he comes to Nicaragua and he's so talented. He sounds great." And on the one hand, I saw her point of view, and I think she had sort of a useful note, which was I had to struggle to not make Mariana too whiny, because you want the reader to sympathize with her enough to go on her journey. But at the same time, I sort of realized, I thought women of my generation sort of inherently know what's tough about dating a man in your same field who's a lot more successful than you are, and sort of celebrated a celebrity. So that was interesting.
Well, there are actually quite a few heartbreaking scenes when Mariana's sort of putting all those pieces together, her relationship with her mother, her relationship with Alan. I felt like you really nailed that struggle, because sometimes when she talks to her mother, she is like a 12-year-old girl, but you totally understand her pain. So you nailed it.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, aren't we all like 12-year-old girls when we talk to our mothers?
Yeah.
Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do.
because
there are just so many fun things to frame, Leon, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah. Any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift-giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? Yeah. That's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life. aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going, like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
Yeah, we are kind of. Now, the grandmother, so you based it on your mother-in-law, correct? Or his grandmother-in-law. Is that tricky, writing about your in-laws' family? Sounds a little tricky.
I'll tell you what, you know, it could be even trickier because my husband's father was a revolutionary and works in the government, in the current government. So at first I wanted the title of the book to be Revolutionaries Make Bad Husbands. And then I realized that would make for some awkward Christmas dinners. But with his grandmother, Mamina, she is one of those women, and this is why I love to write from the point of view of older women because they carry so many life experiences within them. Like within every older woman, there's the young girl, there's the young mother, there's, you know, every stage of her life is carried within her. And you sort of forget that when you see older women, but she really wanted her story to be told. And the funny thing is the character in the book veers off from my grandmother-in-law a great deal. I mean, my grandmother-in-law, you know, my mother-in-law was not a revolutionary, and you know, lots of experiences that the character in the book had, my grandmother-in-law in real life did not have. But she has read the book, and she said to Emilio, my husband, "Oh, Eleni knows things I didn't even tell her. How could she possibly know all these things that happened to me?" And I think she just is one of those women who feels like the star of her own movie and thinks, yes, of course, it's time somebody wrote a book based on me. And I think, you know, there are women of a certain age who feel that way because they have seen so much. They have seen the world transform around them. And if we're lucky enough to live long enough, we all see that.
Well, the scenes of her in New Orleans, too, when she's in high school, you really feel her as a 15 and 16 year old. They're so evocative and well done. You're absolutely there with her when she's in that convent school. So I think that just adds a richness to her perspective as she ages. And then you see her sort of heartbreak over the loss of her husband, who was not the love of her life. You know, you described it. They didn't have so much of a marriage. It was like a business partnership. You had a great phrase that I should have written down. They were just like a team of bulls. Is that what you said? Yeah. How you called them?
Team of oxen.
Yeah. A team of oxen. I love that. Yeah, I love that. That's how you describe their relationship.
Yeah, they had a partnership and a real sort of love and respect for each other, but it wasn't a romance. You know, they weren't lovebirds, which I think is typical of a lot of marriages of that generation, perhaps particularly in Latin America or perhaps particularly of a certain class where everyone felt like you had to marry from your same social group. She still, you know, spent the vast majority of her life with him and is devastated when he passes away. But then she gets sort of caught up in the remembrances of her past. And actually, in real life, Emilio's grandmother, all she wanted for her 80th birthday, which was a few years ago now, was to go back to New Orleans. So we took her back to New Orleans, and we actually toured Sacred Heart. And, you know, she saw pictures on the wall of the nun who was the mistress general when she was there, and she cried. You know, it was really that time period is really very present to her and very present in her mind.
You were just in New Orleans on your book tour. What was that like? I mean, did people show up who were there Sacred Heart girls there who had read the book already or had heard of the book?
Actually, the woman who led us on that tour, the head of alumni relations for Sacred Heart, she was there and she, you know, loved the book and was raving about it. She said, you know, you really captured what Sacred Heart is about, which I was glad to hear, because it's a place that my grandmother-in-law is so fond of, and so it's so central to her life and her life experience and who she is now. So that was really cool. And actually, it's not a spoiler alert, but the the last scene of the novel takes place at Sacred Heart. So that didn't fall into place for me. I sort of didn't know how things were going to end, and that didn't fall into place for me until I saw the school.
Oh, perfect. Okay. We're talking to Eleni N. Gage. Her new book is called The Ladies of Managua. It's just a beautiful, evocative, perfect summer read novel that takes you both to Nicaragua and it takes you to New Orleans. And part of that, Eleni, I understand you were living in Nicaragua when you started the manuscript. Is that correct? I mean, you're an experienced travel writer. You've written memoirs before. You've written other novels set in other countries. So this is kind of your bailiwick, writing about other places. But I love books with a tremendous sense of place, and that is certainly true of The Ladies of Managua. How long were you in Nicaragua when you were writing the book, and what did that add to your process?
We lived there for 7 months, and it's because my husband is a coffee trainer. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
So we lived in Granada, Nicaragua for 7 months because my husband is a coffee trader. And his work took him there. He was on a particular project. His family does live there. They've moved back, but they live in Managua. And I really wanted to live in Granada because it's where his family originally came from. And it's this old Spanish colonial city on the banks of a lake. And you can walk everywhere, which I'm used to as a New Yorker. So it was incredible to be there, and especially to be there while writing, because it was this sort of magical, realist setting, and we had parrots and turtles in the yard, and there were horse and carriages in the street and religious parades all the time, and you really just got sucked into the life of the place. You couldn't just be a spectator. And so that sort of permeated every page, and everyone I talked to had been affected by the revolution and by the war in some way, because it's recent, you know. And that's another thing that I think is so interesting about this conflict. It's sort of the civil war of this country, and it created a lot of social change, but it happened in 1980 and onwards, you know. So it's a very recent conflict, and both kind of the romantic nature of where we were living and the fact that I had all these witnesses to history all around me really influenced the writing.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your butcher box on vacation, which is That's nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled P-R-O-S-E. pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS.
Is it hard to write from three different points of view? What was your process for that as a writer? Did you write one person's story, or was it chapter by chapter? Or, did you have to outline extensively? Because there are a lot of crisscrosses, and the chapters really work one after the other, and you do pickups and drop offs, and it all really works well. I wonder what your process was like for that.
Well, I wrote chapter by chapter, and for me, that structure actually kept me working every day. The other thing about living in Nicaragua was that I had really great, really affordable childcare. So
You know what? I was thinking that. I was thinking, wow, I bet she really had good help and she could get her work done. And then, she was really focused. That's good.
It makes a huge difference for a writer. But I, I would spend the afternoons when I had the babysitter working on my freelance articles that sort of pay the bills. And in the morning when my daughter napped, I would work on the novel. And I'm not someone who outlines heavily. I sort of knew what I wanted to talk about. And then I just let it happen from there. But I always knew who I was going to be writing next. And I sort of knew what I wanted them to be talking about. And that really kept me going. There weren't days where I was like, oh, I don't know what to write about next, because I knew whose turn it was. So that structure really helped. And the three different voices, they always go in the same order. And Mariana and her mother are separated by Isabella, by the grandmother, which they sort of are emotionally as well. And I found that order sort of generated a lot of what happened in a way, because one of them would describe an experience and then I would feel like, oh, that needs to be heard from the other woman's point of view. And it was really empowering to write from the three different voices, because it allowed me to say a lot of the things that go unsaid in all of our daily interactions.
With your mother. Right. I'm just thinking, yep, thinking, yep, sure, can totally understand that. It was probably kind of fun to be somebody different every day, too, in a way.
Yeah, no, it really was. And to have the sort of 360 perspective of you know, what was going on and all the misunderstandings and you know, I feel like often in your own life, when you're faced with a big decision, you kind of think about it from all these different point of views, like, well, what would this person say? And people are going to judge me in this way. And, you know, this structure sort of allowed all those voices to be heard.
Well, it was an absolute pleasure to read. I can't recommend The Ladies of Managua enough. I think it's the perfect book to take to the beach with you this summer, or to take on your trip to Nicaragua, or to take on your trip to New Orleans, or to take any place. I just loved it. We've been talking to Eleni Gage. She is the author of The Ladies of Managua, and we're going to take a break. Stay with us. You've been listening to Satellite Sisters Word Right Festival. We'd like to thank Audible for supporting Satellite Sisters Word Right Festival. They have 150,000 books you can download at Audible. And one, your first one, can be free if you use our special URL. That's audiblepodcast.com/sisters, audiblepodcast.com/sisters. One free audiobook is yours and a 30-day free trial. If you love podcasts, you're going to love downloading books. Perfect for travel, perfect for doing errands around the house, working out too, perfect for commuting. We love our audiobooks. Thanks, Audible, for supporting Satellite Sisters. We'd like to thank Eleni Gage. It was really fun to talk to her. We had some audio issues at the very end of our interview, but I can assure you that her next book will not be about a disaster at a destination wedding. She is the executive editor of Martha Stewart Weddings, and I was hoping that might be the plot. But no, she thinks she's going back to Greece, where her family is from, for her next novel. She is also the author of a memoir, North of Ithaca, A Journey Home Through a Family's Extraordinary Past. And her first novel, Open Waters, came out in 2012. You can find information about Eleni and all her books, including her latest, The Ladies of Managua, at satellitesisters.com, or you can find her author page at amazon.com. It's always fun to talk to authors about their work. You know, everyone has a different process, and everyone works hard, and everyone is plugging away doing what they can do to bring us fantastic stories, and we'd like to thank the authors who join us for the Word Right Festival and congratulate them for getting those books down on the page that we love reading. For more information about our books that we picked for our Best Beach Bag Books of 2015, look for us at satellitesisters.com. The list will be coming out in a couple of weeks, but you can find more author interviews there, of course, satellitesisters.com. Thanks, everybody, and don't forget, call your satellite sister.